Hey, Bruce.
How are you now?
I'm doing all right. Good. We are. What
the
are
epic
we?
Epic experiment.
We are. Yeah, we are. We're talking all things Magic: The Gathering. So, Bruce, where can the masses find us?
If you like what you hear, and I don't know why, because we sound totally ridiculous tonight, you can find our content on thelittlestcouncil.com. Or it's circulating on a variety of social Discord servers and on social media platforms.
You know what it is? It's us waiting for a ban list that's never coming for Standard. That's what's really messing up our heads.
Is that what it is?
The rotation's not actually happening. They're just messing with our heads. All right. I'm going to see that Convoke deck in my dreams tonight.
That freaking Boros mess. Boros aggro deck. Right,
another mess that we're going to discuss is our favorite segment, which is evaluating cards that probably should have never been printed. Garbage or great, everyone. Yes. Garbage or great. Bruce, what do you have for us? Let's see.
This is something steamy, all right? This is steamy. We have to decide if it's steamy good, like a hot plate of like pizza, or is this steamy garbage, like a warm bag of trash left out in the sun in the middle of July. All right, so tonight's card is Charnel Serenade. It is a sorcery, and it's 4BB for a card that says, Surveil 3, then return a creature card from your graveyard to the battlefield with a finality counter on it. Exile Charnel Serenade with 3 time counters on it. And then it has Suspend 3 and for 2 and a black. So, Pete, what do you think of this one? Or are you going to make me go first to defend it?
No, I'll go first. That's fine.
Oh, okay. What do you think?
This is... How do I put this? This is like the equivalency of like an old folks home when it comes to speed of a card.
Oh, no, Pete. Okay.
I'm telling you, man, if it didn't have the finality counter, I would play the card because it's like pretty cool. But dude, this is so slow, man. Like, if you're trying to get out a creature from your yard and win the game, you don't care about suspending it again and recurring again. I would just rather play that other card that we mentioned a few weeks ago, the one that does it better, the one that has the escape cost. That card is just better.
Okay.
It's just hands down better. Like 3 mana, suspend it, and then say you try to cast and you have no creatures in your yard, it just fizzles. That must feel really bad. I know it has time counters on it, but like...
Yeah, okay. I hear you.
You still have to target, right, for that to resolve? I guess it says return a creature card, so I don't know. How does the time counters work? Do you have to... Can you do it multiple times? You only get to do it twice.
What do you mean?
You know how like it says, you know, exile it with 3 time counters, and then you remove the last one, you cast it again. Does it just do it again?
Yeah. So it continually does this.
That's dumb, but also bad. I just feel like it's too slow. I feel like you're gonna die before you get to actually play it.
Okay.
Why do you think it's good?
Rebuttal. All right. So. This sort of effect, this sort of reanimate effect, now has been reasonably entrenched as a 5 mana card now for the last, let's call it at least 5 years, or maybe more. There are cheaper reanimate effects that are kicking around out there in the world, but those tend to be reasonably cost prohibitive. They exist, but if you're looking to do it, you can do this. Is pretty interesting. So you're paying an extra mana for Surveil 3. So this can help alleviate the issue of, I don't have a target, but I want a target.
What are you trying to get back, though? Like what would you try to get back?
So, I mean, it depends entirely on the deck, but I'm looking at this as something like, if you're playing some sort of Muldrotha mill deck, or you're playing some sort of like sort of self-mill deck or Dredgy-style deck, where you're looking like you've stocked your yard quite handily, and now you're looking to pull something good back, like your Archon of Cruelty, or you're looking to go get like just something nasty out of your yard. And this effect is not, I mean, it's not horribly overcosted. Like, Surveil 3 is, like, pretty big game. If this was Surveil 1, okay, sure, I would say this is kind of not good. But Surveil 3, Surveil is much better, like, much better than Scry already. And when people stick extra Scrys on cards, that's just good value. So, as a baseline, if you cast this as a 6-mana sorcery, I'm not saying it's great. But I'm saying it's a viable option as for some sort of reanimation deck, and you're going to be almost guaranteed to hit something out of your yard, because the Surveil 3 is going to mean you're going to dumpster something in there for you to get back. Now, what got me going here was the Suspend 3, where you can suspend this, and then you can get it again. So, if you suspend this early, let's imagine you could probably suspend this on turn 2. All right, let's be real. You can likely... You know, black mana, play a swamp, and you play your Sol Ring turn one. That's not an outrageous pattern to play. So turn two, you can suspend this. Who knows if you've already been able to put a creature in your graveyard? Maybe you're playing some sort of if you Faithless Looting something in your bin already. You're looking to actively engage this. So now you've stocked your yard. Now, if you do it that sort of early and set yourself up, you've got a situation where your opponents have to make a tactical choice. Do they want to let this go off and activate their and build their own board? Or are they going to engage with your graveyard and hate out whatever it is you're sliding in the graveyard early on in the game?
So my problem is like a lot of these recursion decks, they want to repeatedly recur these bombs. And if you put a finality counter on a creature and then... it dies, it defeats the purpose. Where, like, at this point, I would rather just play a card like Scarab God, where I make a token copy of it, or something like that, that's faster and more efficient, if I'm going to do it that way. The only reason I'd play this card is if I'm going to combo out with a creature the turn I play this. So, like, if I'm playing, some sort of pile where I got, you know, a Thassa's Oracle or something, and I don't care about it dying on the stack, I still get the trigger and I win the game. But other than that, I just don't see it. Because unless, the card you're recurring is, something that is unkillable, like an indestructible card. Recurring Toski would be really funny, because it's indestructible. So the only
way... Hard to deal with,
You have to sacrifice it or something. But,
I don't know. So a couple of things there. So there are creatures around that allow you to move... counters like finality counters off of your stuff. So that's you can circumvent that. Again, if you're building your deck, no, there aren't, but there are things that do it. And so the other piece that you can lean into this one, there is a cycle of cards that I believe is a red and a blue card that we've seen in a previous commander set that have this text on it, where once it pops off, it goes back into exile and you have to wait 3 more turns for it to pop off. And those cards were widely panned right from the outset as not being good cards. Until, again, lo and behold, people try them out. And they realize, actually, they're very powerful engines that if you could put them online. Pardon me?
What cards specifically are you talking about, though?
So, let me go have a look and see if I can find it on EDH Rec. But there's... nope, that's not the card I want. EDH Rec. So there was a series of cards that were printed in a commander set. And I want to say the best one was red. I've forgotten exactly what the text was, but it was one of these ones where it pops off and exiles itself on the third, just like this one, with suspend. Maybe I should look for it over here and look for suspend and red cards.
All right. So you're still not convincing me, though.
Okay.
I apologize. I just feel like it's too slow. I do. I'm serious. When I say, 6 mana, it's a lot. Unless you can get 2 creatures back or something. Or, you know, even Victimize, in my opinion, is better if you're trying to do the recursion sort of
route. Right.
I think this is just a combo card. I strictly think this is a worse version of, some of the demure Surveil recur creature cards that they printed in Ravnica. But go for it.
So, Rousing Refrain. So it's 3 red sorcery, add red for each card in target opponent's hand until end of turn. You don't lose this mana as steps and phases end. Exile Rousing Refrain with 3 time counters on it and suspends for 3 for 1 and a red. So similar text, and is played widely in almost 20,000 decks. And like, this is a similar, it's a similar text line on a card that similar casting cost, equally, like, I mean, like, Rousing Refrain was widely panned. Absolutely was widely panned. And I think this is, and what it does is it allows you to cheat on mana. When it pops off on suspend, you now get a chance to cheat on mana because you make a whole slew of red cards because you target somebody who's got five or six cards in hand and you got a big influx of mana. Well, you can do the same sort of thing. If you activate your graveyard, you dump some big things in, you're cheating in something large for a small investment. I think this card actually is like much better than garbage. Is it a premier reanimation spell? No, that's not. Reanimate, Animate Dead, Corpse Dance, Necromancy, like, those are still the top dogs of what you're doing. But I do think there is very real applicability that this is not just a 7-cent card and should be more intriguing to people who are looking to reanimate with something, with some other targets in your library.
Yeah.
That's my point.
I'm just going to push back because Rousing Refrain is really good for red because red might need the ramp and it might be potentially free. Similar to the 5-mana add 1 red for each tapped land your opponents control.
Mana Geyser.
Mana Geyser, right? So it's like that one is worth, I guess, playing. I looked up, you know, Exile with 3 time counters. There's like 7 cards that have that sort of mode. Yeah, not to go too far out, but I guess we'll see. I think you should test it against me, see if it works for you. And
I've got an Archon of Cruelty that I really want to put in a deck, and I think I'm going to build something graveyardy, and I'm going to see if I can put this to good use.
All right. So
that's my plan.
Sounds
good.
What
have you got tonight?
All right, so this one is also, we're split on this one too, so. This is from our friend Fuji, actually. He requested that I put this card in. And apparently from Loading Ready Run, Ben Wheeler won a game on a stream by exiling an instant from his hand to get back Heroic Intervention. So to not spoil it too much, Holistic Wisdom is a 3-mana enchantment, 2 green and a colorless. From Odyssey, it says, pay 2 of colorless, pay any... 2. Exile a card from your hand. Return target card from your graveyard to your hand if it shares a card type with the card exiled this way. What do you think, Bruce?
So, I don't love this sort of enchantment. I never have. Because it really... I think the more I keep playing the format, and like I recently, last week, I was kicking around the precons from Fallout, and I really feel like by the time you start getting the 3 and 4 mana cost in your deck, you really need to be doing stuff that's going to be actively engaging in building a board, because the decks are too fast. If you're looking at a deck like even the new Dogmeat deck, like Dogmeat's coming at you hard and furious with like a really strong Voltron theme. The Mothman is not a lot different. There's a really strong clock there. If I'm taking, you know, turn 3 or turn 4 off to cast this and try and set up a value engine with this, I'm really concerned that I'm going to be behind my opponent significantly. I recognize the fact that really this sort of card, you really only need to use it, like activate it once, maybe twice in a game for it to get your value out of it. But we're still worried that sliding it in a deck, you know, the precons are now, like, there's so many strong cards, even in the precons, that to take a turn off and cast this on a thing that doesn't block, it doesn't, you know, it doesn't ramp you, it doesn't leave bodies behind on the field to get in the way, you're asking yourself to get kicked around. And I know we've got 40 life points in Commander, but those 40 life points can disappear pretty quick when Dog meets a 7/7 or an 8/8 or a 9/9. So I don't love this. I can see the applicability. I don't love it. I'm really concerned this would be the sort of card that you play it and then you're going to find that you never have an opening to really resolve something through it, and use it well. and you're just going to have spent 3 mana to cast a thing when I almost would have rather played a valued creature of some sort.
I think that you could do some really weird things with this. So like Slime Against Humanity decks, you could exile the slime to get back another slime to play a slime, which I find kind of funny.
Because
like it makes your slimes bigger regardless of what you do. But that's just a very niche way to do it. Secret Salvaging, guys, look up that one. That one would get you all of the slimes in your hand for 5 mana. So Sudden Salvaging or Secret Salvage, I think is what it's called. But anyway. I think you could definitely do some weird stuff with this if you're playing decks that have a lot of utility lands, if you're getting rid of a basic land to get back your Cabal Coffers or your Academy Ruins or something, if you're playing some sort of blue-green thing.
Or you need one of those channel lands that keep ending up in your graveyard, like your Baseju or your Odawara.
Sort of duplicability. Enchantments, you could ditch like a card. Maybe there's an enchantment that's not relevant against the board you're playing against, and you get back something that helps lock down some problematic permanents, like Grasping Fate or something. Or Grasp of Fate.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was talking about when I was exposed to this card, the Instance of Sorceries one I think is cheeky, especially if you're trying to remove a problematic board state. Like say you get rid of your ramp spell for Blasphemous Act because you don't need to ramp anymore. You don't have any more basics left in your deck or something.
Right.
The Heroic Intervention I think is cute because you have an overwhelming board state and they're trying to blow up your whole board. I see the restriction on it. I think you could definitely make a case though that cards that care about things in exile might not really care. Like say you exile land and you're able to play lands from exile through some other means, but I don't know. It's like Cadaverous Bloom. What's that black green? It's an enchantment, and it's like exile a card from your hand, add 2 black or 2 green to your mana pool. It's a very old squandered. I think it's like I have it in my binder actually, as we speak. But reminded me of that sort of interesting restriction where we haven't seen exile a card from your hand in a while, right? To do an effect.
No, it's true.
As well, they've sort of stopped panning that, which I find interesting, right? For free value's sake.
No.
But yeah, I don't know. Even pulling back like a creature you might need to ramp a little bit faster might not be terrible if you're stuck on mana or something.
I can see the applicability. I'm just worried that like you're going to end up stuck where you're just not going to be able to activate it very much, and you're going to look at your pieces like. You're going to have... The land one is the one that actually does make sense to me. Because you have, like... If you can trade your basic into a much better land again because someone destroyed your coffers, that one to me makes sense. But, like, do I really want to spend... Like, if I'm putting an Instant or Sorcery in my deck, probably because it's a banger. It's a good one. I'm not putting in... Titan Strength in my deck in most cases.
What's wrong with Titan Strength?
Nothing wrong unless you're Feather. Like if it's Feather, it's an all star. But every other deck, it's like very mid, to bad. And we get to the situation where like I'm not putting Titan Strength or some other combat-y style of trick in there unless I really need it. So I don't really have a superfluous number of instances or sorceries I'm prepared to just dumpster for things back. Now, like the example of Heroic Intervention is it's a huge blowout because you just protected your whole board.
What about pulling back a major draw engine that you have in your deck that was removed? You know what I mean?
So, yeah,
and you get your gas back into your hand.
Heuristic Study got blown up and you can get it back. And I mean, I get it. Like, I can see all that. I just worry that you're spending 3 mana to resolve this. You're going to then spend 2 more to go and get your thing back and plus a card, and you're just not going to find that many openings to just do that without yourself being under pressure. So, That's my point. I don't love it. I see applicability, and I hope people try it and have great success. It'd be something that I'd be really frightened of putting in my deck, because I think I'm going to get torched by somebody coming at me with an aggressive deck or a real hot start, and I'm suddenly behind the eight ball real quickly. So I'm unlikely to want to try and build around this.
So here are the top commanders for this card. Okay. Mm-hmm. You got Asmira, Holy Avenger.
Yeah.
You got Farika, God of Affliction, which I'm surprised anybody plays anymore.
We don't. It's a lie.
There's Tatsunari, Toad Rider, which actually is a cheeky way to make this card interesting.
That's kind of fun, actually. I kind of like it because it's already an enchantment. Tatsunari cares about that. You can get, other enchantments. So I kind of like that option. I think that's pretty neat.
People are playing this with Insidious Roots, too, which I find interesting.
Yeah, that's like, there's a lot of buzz around that.
But yeah, I mean, not many people have... I don't think I've just seen this card, right? Or have found out a way to use it beyond the Enchantress build, which is not surprising. It's the most consistent.
Yeah.
But, no, I mean, I don't know. I feel like it could do some weird things, especially in like an aggro list, like a Gruul beatdown list.
It's definitely going to cause some people some grief, like, for sure. Like, I have no doubt, like, somebody's going to use this and just absolutely loop something nasty with it. And I'm going to be like, well, I'm now cooked. I don't have a good answer to this. I still be reticent to put it in my list until I've, been soundly trounced by it by three or four times.
And this is interesting. People have used it with Tishana's Tidebinder as well.
Ooh, that's kind of spicy.
I'm not sure how that would work per se, but I find that very interesting. Because it doesn't make it lose abilities because it's an enchantment.
Right.
So it counters the triggered ability on the stack.
Right.
But I'm not sure if that actually just... I probably neutralizes the whole thing.
Maybe.
But yeah, interesting stuff. So... Tonight, or this episode, I keep forgetting what time of day it is, but the time change has really messed me up. But
as a father of many small children, yes, everyone's body clocks there's been havoc played by the time change.
We're gonna talk about protection. So Bruce, when you think of protection, what do you think of? Do you think of SPF? What do you think of?
No, I don't. I mean, in the context of playing Commander, I think about strategies. When I often build decks, my number one thing is, after I've built my synergy pieces and I've found the what I want to do with my deck, I ask myself, what am I most likely going to fold to that if people play is going to make sure that my deck doesn't do what I want it to do? And then I try and make sure there's pieces in my list that are going to allow me to either fade or stop or protect myself from whatever I think is going to be the most common way my deck is going to get demolished by some effect.
So now, give us an example here of a card that you would play in a particular deck. Like, for example, a tokens deck. What would you run to protect your hopefully overwhelming board state?
So, for instance, in a lot of my green-white token decks, I play a lot of Unbreakable Formations. So this is a card that you cast at instant speed, and it can give all your creatures on your board indestructible. So if my biggest concern is, for instance, in Maha, which is my green-white landfall token deck, that my board is going to get wrecked by a board wipe, which is frequently what players try to deploy to slow me down. Unbreakable Formation is one of the tools I'll put on my deck to try and make sure that doesn't derail my game plan.
Sure. And then, if I'm looking at a graveyard deck, for example, something that's slower, that's a little bit more grindy, I might run, weirdly enough, a board wipe to me becomes sort of like protection. If my deck is so slow and I'm able to get my creatures back from the yard. So It's interesting. Yeah. It's like two sides of the same coin. So in that narrative, I've sort of slowly made this sort of epiphany about how I play the game. So my goal when I'm building a deck is not necessarily to protect like a particular permanent, but to protect the game position overall. So like each color has its way about protecting its stuff. And a lot of commander players especially get into this habit where they have to play all of the quote-unquote good protection spells. So, like, they're putting Teferi's Protection every white deck that they have. You know, they're putting in Fierce Guardianship. They're putting in Deflecting Swat. They're putting in these, like, various one-for-one sort of cards that protect a particular permanent that they're trying to keep alive in the game right. from their opponents. But I've started to stretch it a little bit beyond that sort of black and white thing, looking at, okay, a counter spell is a protection spell, but also what can I do with it in this other context? So like that 6-mana Convoke one I've used many times because it allows me to play it for less than 6 mana. It counters a spell that might mess up my board and allows me to draw 2 cards and discard a card.
That's the one from March of the Machine, right?
The 6-mana, it's like 6-mana, I forget what it's particularly called at this point. It starts with an A, but yeah. Anyway. So that's a weird example, right? But anyway, not to digress too much, I'm thinking about it as like, I'm not a very good chess player,
right?
But in terms of understanding board position to protect myself from people who might blow up my strategy, I've looked at particular cards that I don't think are very good in a vacuum, but are good for the particular deck that I'm playing, if that makes sense. So we'll get into that in a bit. But to go into more of like the theory of it, I grew up playing a lot of backgammon. In Greek, it's called tavli. It's a like a cultural game, basically, in the Middle East and in Greece and other countries. Yeah.
It's called artistic refusal. That's the
thank you.
One.
Yeah. It's a very flavorful card. But backgammon is like a mixture of probability and skill. Because not every time are you allowed to play the game perfectly. And what I mean by that is it's dictated by the dice that you roll and what numbers you roll and throughout the game.
Okay.
So there are situations where you have to make a decision to protect your pieces or to become aggressive and potentially create more risk for yourself later on. Right?
Okay.
So without going into too much detail, depending on if you're able to think about how the odds of the dice rolls impacting you to progress your board without being completely blown out by the other person rolling and moving the pieces, 9 times out of 10, you can make a risky move and still protect your stuff. So the idea with Magic is like you can still potentially protect your stuff and accrue better value for yourself over time if you're even if it looks a little greedy in the grand scheme of it.
Okay.
So an example I like to give is like Descent of Dragons in my tokens deck is not a great card, but in that deck, it's a really good card if I can 2-for-1 my opponent when I have 5 1-1s that become 5/4/4s with haste.
Right.
That are flying or whatever. Where some people are looking at protection as strictly like, if I play X, then I have to play Y to impact and protect X. You know what I'm saying?
Right. So what you're suggesting is that if there's a game piece, a lot of people look at it from this just straight exchange of resources. I play a really powerful card, whatever that may be, and that now it's incumbent on me to protect it through some means, whether it's counterspell to back up my powerful sorcery, or it's a something like a something that grants indestructibility to my, you know, my commander, like my Ur-Dragon or whatever, so that I can ensure that it doesn't get removed immediately. Okay, so you're changing the paradigm away from a straight exchange of resources into like a more higher level strategic thought process, I guess.
Yeah, it's not necessarily playing a card because the card is good and it protects the thing. It's thinking about, like, can I protect the thing potentially, but also further my game plan?
Right, okay.
In this way? Or can it provide me enough value to get me ahead of my opponents, right?
Okay.
So like in certain aggressive decks, people play Defense Grid because it prevents people from killing their creatures because they cost two more on their turn to target their stuff, right? And if you're beating people in the face, you really are not going to cast a lot of instants or sorceries per se because you're trying to beat them in the face as fast as possible.
But Pete, what about Titan Strength?
But yeah, Titan Strength.
No, you don't play that much?
That's not exactly what I'm looking for.
Oh, right. Okay, fair enough. Okay. Okay, so I hear where you're getting at. And like I like the theory behind it because, you know, I too like to win my games. I don't like to be beaten soundly every time. And so if I hearing you talk about things that are going to protect my game position and move me further forward, like Descent of Dragons is one example. Like now you're trading your little things for big things and that's cool. What are some other examples that like what might be of things that would fit in the similar vein? Of like, I think I need a couple other examples so I can see how this is being put into play.
So I like to, this is me with weird word associations, because I like to do that to help myself remember things that I think are beneficial, like in overall, not just Magic. So I'm thinking about four types of cards.
Okay.
And this is going to be interesting, but my first one is what I like to call a rattlesnake, which people probably have seen before and like it's a card that is people remove it, but it's not the actual problem, but you're playing it so that it eats removal so that you can protect your overall game plan. So for example, Padim in your Optimus Prime deck is a prime example of a card that eats removal but also protects your entire board if is left unchecked. So it kind of forces your opponents to have to answer it. Songbird's Blessing is an aura from one of the Commander precons in my Killian deck. It literally allows me to cheat out auras for free when I attack. I don't even have to deal combat damage. I just swing with it, and it's for 4 mana, and then it just reveal the top cards until you hit an aura. You can attach it to a creature and be on your merry way. So that's a card that needs to be answered, right? Let's think more general, though. What's another good example of a card that I've seen recently?
I mean, I'll be honest with you. I think a great example of a card that demands an answer and is going to soak stuff up, and lots of players know is going to die, would be like a Smothering Tithe. Like Smothering
Tithe
doesn't
necessarily protect your board, though, right? That doesn't exactly give you some sort of failsafe, although it does create choices, I guess, right?
Well, I mean, I guess it doesn't necessarily. Yeah, it presents choices, which means your opponent now has to play the game of are they going to guess wrong? Because are they going to use their Nature's Claim now and take out the Smothering Tithe, or do they wait until you hit your Anointed Procession and do something that is like a little more busto? And I mean, you may not have the Smothering Tithe in your hand. You may not see it till your 40th card in your deck, in which case using your Nature's Claim is probably the right choice but if they use it now and you do have it in hand, then they've guessed wrong and you're like fist pump all the way to the bank, baby. So it's kind of offer you a form of protection because now they've dedicated a premium piece of targeted removal to something that it was a really nice card to keep on the battlefield, but it's not necessarily what you're using to smack your opponent upside the head with a bajillion tokens.
Yeah. I think to look at this, it would be like a card that creates almost too much value for you and thus needs to be answered. So like a Johnny, the Selesnya Johnny that puts loyalty counters on each planeswalker is a weird way of protecting a Super Friends deck, right? Because it creates too much value over time. Underworld Breach, I think, is a great example, too, of a card where people look at it and they get scared of it, so they answer it immediately. Goblin Welder is another one. There's some of these weird utility cards that create a lot of value if left unchecked, but don't necessarily break the game in half if left unanswered, but yet are important enough that they need to be checked on. So I feel like a lot of smart players, they determine what those cards are and then they answer them. Like, here's another example, very simple one. A tribal card that allows for them to grant evasion, like a card that gives your zombies flying, for example.
Oh, yeah, like the... Yeah, okay.
You know what I'm saying? Or, like, there's the... There's a new merfolk that does it. It gives everything +1/+0 in flying, and it's a 5-mana merfolk.
Right,
and
it's
like in blue or something. So, yeah, that's where I'm going with this, you know what I'm saying?
Okay, that makes sense to me. I kind of get it. Like, you're looking to do things that are... You're right, and I think those are all good examples of some very powerful rattlesnakes, and that your opponents, if they leave that on the battlefield, they're going to die anyway. So they have to do something about it.
But if it gets removed, it doesn't really break, and it doesn't really break you either.
Yeah. So you're okay on that exchange,
Cryptolith,
but your opponent,
right?
Yeah,
Cryptolith, right, is another example of a card that gives that potential.
Right. Absolutely. Okay. I got it. All right.
Yeah. Anyway.
I'm with you.
The next one I like is what we talked about briefly earlier, is I like to call it like a ratio effect. So like one for one, you know, you're trading off a card for a card. Very traditional way of looking at playing Magic, right? Deflecting SWAT, Path to Exile, you know, Hexproof Tricks, Boros Charm. A lot of those cards Boros Charm's not as...
No, Boros Charm is
different. Snakeskin Veil, I guess.
There's a lot of these sort of effects. And some of these effects I really like. Like the deflecting swats and the bolt bends and that sort of stuff. I like those effects. I don't like the green protection ones, like the...
You're not a big Veil of Summer guy?
I am not a big Veil of Summer guy. I know people love to play it. I do not like it particularly myself.
I think it's meta-dependent, right? And it's CDH-dependent, really.
Yeah, I think it feels like it's a very CDH card, but I find, like, in casual metas, it's not really pertinent. Neither is, like, a Tamiyo Safekeeping or a Snakeskin Veil, where the most common piece of interaction people are going to have is the full-on sweeper, which is not really addressing the issue. So,
yeah.
So I don't love those one for one. Tamiyo Safekeeping is probably the strongest of those ones. But I don't love those.
But counter spells, I guess, fit in here very nicely, because the idea is it's supposed to protect you from the player's interaction or the player's problematic thing. Mm-hmm. For a lot of people that I know that are younger in the game, that have either just started or even playing a lot of draft and stuff over the years, I've seen players get very upset when their stuff gets countered. But it's really a matter of, that's what Blue Eyes have to offer for protection, right?
That's true. Yeah. And I think at that point, people, like, counter spells, if you're playing opponents got blue, like, it's often telegraphed in a way that you can probably
play around it, especially in draft. Yeah.
Well, not just draft, but even commander. Because, like, what are the likely they have more than one counterspell in hand? Sure, if you're playing CDH, you probably have three. Like, who are we kidding? But if you're playing...
Free.
Yeah, and they're all free, so who cares? But if you're playing in a casual pod, they might only have one. Like, they're going to have a counterspell or a negate or something. And if you can either bait it out early on something that they, again, a rattlesnake that they have to address... Now the chances of you having it being much more in the clear is there. Now there are always the decks like the Tauren Sky Summoner that's got 23 counter spells.
Yeah, definitely.
Shout out to that guy.
I'm not gonna throw your brother under the bus. Oh wait, my bad. No, his wasn't that bad. I actually thoroughly enjoyed it. So the next one is similar to George's Tauren deck. It breaks parity. So we like to have cards that also break parity. I accidentally spoiled this when I talked about Boros Charm, but the idea that these cards are sort of like not seen as a protection element. Boros Charm is more straightforward, but it puts you ahead or further ahead when this spell resolves. So an example I like to give that I use pretty effectively, I'd say sometimes, is Living Death. That's one of my favorite pet cards. And it is a board wipe, but it also provides extra value at the end of the day. So I play around the card, weirdly enough. You know what I'm saying? Or, what did I use recently? I used a really strange card in the Ancient One deck where I was able to protect my board because I made it awkward for them to swing at me. But I forget how I did it. Anyway, there are just certain cards that provide this extraneous effort that you see, right? Like, it's hard for me to think right now about a card that might prevent people from trying to kill you without just doing it in the game. I guess, weirdly enough, the 3-mana 2/3, when it dies, it draws me a card or leaves the battlefield, prevented somebody from hitting me for like 6 turns. The construct?
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, I think
what's a more parody buster card? What are you thinking of?
Well, I mean, those are that parody buster is a category where I would like I often lean into that one. That's the one I'm often going to. That's the Unbreakable Formations. That's the Rap and Vigors. That's the Golgari Charms. That's the things that are going to make sure that I don't lose my creature heavy board. Because a lot of my decks are creature centric. I am highly unlikely to play a deck that doesn't have at least 25 creatures in it. So I am looking inevitably to protect my creature base from being wiped off the board. So those would be parody busters. Like my opponent, like board wipes, and I keep the Golgari Charm up and I can regenerate all my things, they're going to be probably pretty frustrated because now, you know, the whole board got wiped except for me, or, you know, if they did something silly like the Ingaric's Wake. And so now they're looking at how keeping their board state, and I've got mine, and the other two players are now probably dead in the water. So that's, you know, where I look to break parity on these sorts of protection effects. I mean, I'm a little, that's why I think this is an interesting conversation, because I have often have a much narrower interpretation than I think what you're postulating here. And why perhaps some of my decks falter, where some of yours continue to have success, because you look at it in a much more flexible way.
What is success, really? I mean,
the frequency with which you win is well known by people who play with you, my friend. So, again, you play well.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
And I mean, I'm going to be honest with you, audience. Like Pete, often this flexible approach that Pete has, this understanding of protection, allows Pete to extract value where I would be hard pressed to try and extract the same value, even with the same pieces. So, you know, so this parody buster stuff is super fascinating, because that's often where my brain goes. So,
I feel like the Skullspore Nexus is another example of a card that prevents like someone from wanting to kill your stuff too.
Okay, let's just read that, please. Skullspore.
I got it pulled up here. It's hold on. It's an expensive card, like mana cost, but it costs less for the greatest power you control among creatures. Yeah,
so it's 6 green green. This spell costs X less to cast, where X is the greatest power among creatures you control. Whenever one or more non-token creatures you control die, create a fungus dinosaur creature token with the base in power and toughness, each equal to the total power of those creatures. So, does this make one super huge monster token, or does it make a bunch of small tokens that are equivalent to the ones that just got removed?
Oh, if you like kill all the creatures at once.
Yeah.
I believe, doesn't it?
Do I get one big scary monster, or just?
I think, trying to think about the interaction, because I've gotten one big scary monster before, but I also had a creature.
So in the notes, use the power of the non-token creatures that died as they last existed on the battlefield to determine the base power and toughness of the token created by the middle ability. So I guess sounds to me like you're getting a singular token.
I think you get one token that's as big as the biggest creature that died, right?
Total power of the creature. So like if you had 3 creatures that were all 3/3s, you'd get a 9/9.
Mm-hmm.
That's a pretty good way to protect yourself from getting smashed. Yeah. Because I would attacking into that board state and then knowing you're going to trade off a bunch of junk and then get left with an even bigger threat, and that's going to result in your opponents having to just expend yet another piece of removal to deal with your 8/8 or your 9/9 or 10/10 thing that you can now double up with the Skullspore Nexus as a secondary ability. Or I guess that's a tertiary ability there. So that's a pretty cool card. That's a good piece of protection. I've got one sitting in a binder, and I should probably play that because that's a, like you say,
play it in your Dagatar deck because it would be cheeky.
Not just cheeky. I think it would actually be a really good way to prevent allow myself you to from getting move
stuff around too.
Yeah, I like that.
And then if you can move all the counters around too, you can make something really, really chunky. Anyway, so that leads us into like the final aspect of this. We sort of moved from individual cards to sort of like trading off one for one, and then we went to this idea of like parity busting, like looking at it differently. Now we're looking at the final, which is like a restriction on something, which is what most people think about when they think about, I think, protection in other ways beyond just Teferi's protection. They're looking at, you know, the propaganda effects. They're looking at these sort of stifling sort of effects that slow down the game, like rule of law, or like they can't interact with your board, like Myrel. But I was looking at it, and we were looking at it as more of combat-oriented protection. So like Marisi, Breaker of the Coil, has really fudged some people's game plans in aggressive decks.
Yeah.
Defense Grid, which we mentioned earlier.
Mm-hmm.
I
find like things like rule of law effects are really, really, really powerful protection for a lot of stuff because they really force your opponents to prioritize what they're going to choose to cast. And then that's going to buy you a lot of time and protect your board a lot longer than it would if they could just fire things off. So I think that's another sort of a spell, like they're really constricting how much your opponents can deploy. I think is also like a really interesting way of looking at protecting. I mean, I've never thought of using a rule of law effect as a protection spell. Like I've contemplated it to like hamper my opponents so that I can gain advantage. Like if we go card for card and my cards are better than yours, I should win. But you're right. Like using it as a way to ensure that your opponents can't deploy their full game plan and they have to now make a tactical choice. Are they going to be wiping the board or messing with your board state, or will they going to be building their own? And I think I would overwhelmingly decide most of my opponents would rather build their own board state. And that provides you with some much needed breathing room and time to set up either other more effective protections or, allow you the chance to have things that are going to be allow you to close the game out before you need the protection.
So like you could even run rule of law in a deck where you're just creating like ETB value. So you're slowing down other people so they can't interact with your flickering or your sort of other nonsense that you're doing on the current board. Yeah, Vidalgorri with it. But I also like Silent Arbiter is a card. It's a 1/5. It says no more than one creature can attack, no more than one creature can block each combat. Ooh, that becomes a win con in my and a protection spell in my Greven deck because I like to really hit you hard and then I'm worried about the crackback half the time.
It makes
Greven unblockable and it also allows for me to not potentially die to a huge swing back. So that's the other way I've looked at protection as sort of ways to further my game plan in a very affirmative way.
That is actually an ingenious piece of tech in Greven that I've forgotten about, and I'm like, that's pretty good if you're making big scary Voltron decks. Like that's, and again, like that Dogmeat deck is exactly that. Like it
allows it to get through without having to take a bunch of 1/1s down with it.
A bunch of squirrels otherwise drag doggo right down. And if you only can block with a singular token or whatever, a singular target, then that Rancored up dog meat, because that's be real, Rancor's in that list.
Yeah, of course it's in that list. It's a very flexible card, and it's very, very good in those aura-based Voltron beatdown dog stuff. But this reminds me of just like when I used to play with Alex a lot when we were growing into the game. My good friend, he would always do that. He would find ways to make cards break this parity and also provide advantage but protect his board at the same time.
Right.
He did it with Padim a lot when he used to play a Bruticlad deck. He did it with Sigarda with the different Sagardas, the various Sagardas over the years. The ones
right, yeah.
The one that allowed him couldn't sacrifice stuff, whatever. White probably has the best, obviously, like, historically has had this sort of idea of the best protection support color, because it has your circle of protection and all these other ways to protect stuff like one for one.
Dude, no one. When was the last time you saw circle protection get played? Like, that is it's an objectively like heinous way of playing the game. I have to say, like, as someone who played in an era when circle of protection was actually a card we all ran in our decks, it just made the game so miserable. Like, no one's doing that anymore. No one's doing that. But, like, the Myrel, the Grand Arbiters, the Rule of Laws, those sorts of effects are what I think about when I think of white right now. And I forget that there are other effects in other colors that, things like Revenge of Ravens, which doesn't usually get thought of as a protection card, might make people reconsider how they're attacking.
So a slight annoyance and slight hindrance, but it also pushes you to potentially survive long enough if your deck is slower than that aggro deck, which is neat. Even like those weird, like exile then return it to play, like Athreos, right?
Mm-hmm.
These sort of ruling effects where it's like you have to choose could create more advantage over time and protect you from potential. Because, I mean, the politicking in the game can be impacted by some of these other decisions that you're making with these.
Absolutely. It's a really interesting way of a much more flexible approach to understanding protection than just using, like, because, I mean, like you said, like, the default position that many players take is I have to run Teferi's Protection or I have to run Heroic Intervention. And they
put it in the list. You know, they stack it in their deck build that, I need 8 to 10 spells of protection. But it's really just a bunch of either, like, counters or, like, you know, deflecting swats and stuff like that. Yeah.
Yeah. So they're sort of like playing a very generic approach, a very generic answer to the problem without asking themselves the critical question of, is this the best tool for what my deck wants to play into? And I think, like, some of the examples you provided for, like, Grevin example is a great one. The Spellspore Nexus is a good way if you're having, you know, you're to protect your board so that you don't lose to stuff. Like, these are different approaches that may not protect your whole board. Like, you're going to lose a bunch of your creatures or you're going to lose some artifacts or whatever, but your game plan hasn't been hampered and you're going to continue to be, like, you should be able to leverage whatever happens to significant advantage after that effect. So
a newer one that I've considered too is like the cards that say stuff like, whenever you draw your second card, make a thing.
Yes.
In like blue, because it's not necessarily what you would consider protection per se, but it also provides that extra bit of value that you could survive, like on the stack. Like, you draw two cards at instant speed, you make a blocker.
I like things that, like, big Thopter tokens or the Nadir Kraken that makes, like, extra tentacle tokens and things like that. They're just bodies and fodder that you can use to block or sacrifice or do whatever you need to do.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So I think just to move away, like, I think there are other cards that I feel like are not intuitive. So, like, basically what we're trying to demonstrate is, like, if you understand what your game plan is and the weaknesses that you may have, you can maximize your strengths and you can think outside the box with this sort of removal protection. How do I keep myself alive without begging my friends, hey, don't kill me this turn. I want to
try this thing. I hate doing that. I hate begging. Please don't kill my stuff. I feel so bad.
Hey, man, I haven't really done anything in this game, but, you know, please let me live. Everybody lives, right?
It sucks. Everybody lives. That's a bad card. Sorry.
There's no right answer. I mean, the color pie has this weird way of looking at this effect effectively And then I think there are two, like, graveyard hate, I don't consider protection, although some people think of it as that sense of stability that they're looking for, playing like Soul Guide Lantern and Tormod's Crypt and stuff, which I don't, I think that's just teching against your friends, really. I don't necessarily think that's intuitive.
I think in order to build that sort of protection in your list, you need to know what you're likely to face. So if you're walking into an unknown meta, you're going to probably shy away from much of that removal sort of stuff. If you know you're going to play Muldrotha tonight, well, then you're going to put the Bajuka Bog and the Tormod's Crypt and the Soul Guide Lantern and all the rest of the hate just to make sure that your opponent who is playing Muldrotha can go kick rocks.
But that's not what we're...
Protection. That's not protection. That is an active attempt to, as a foil to your opponent's strategy. And I think that's a very different conversation.
Which merits some discussion, I think, because I've seen it. I've seen it happen in playgroups before.
Yeah, for sure.
The other consideration is single targeted land destruction, I think, should be included in decks. Like, protecting yourself could also mean slowing down the guy who's ramping really fast to allow you to actually catch up to them.
Audience, you can't see me nodding my head here, but I can't nod my head enough because we have all watched the guy play the Simic land pile who just vomits a million land on the battlefield.
Nothing wrong with it, but if you see it every time you play, you're just like, oh, man. Well, I don't know, man. I used to bash that color pairing a lot, but I've seen people do some really weird and neat things with it now. So I want to build a Goose Mother deck. I don't know. Maybe I'm just sort of softening myself up a bit.
No, that's fine. my thought on that is like, and I think you made a very important point here in the show notes. And I want to make sure we reiterate here. So, audience, let's contemplate, like, I know the social contract usually says don't blow up people's lands because playing spells is way more fun than just sitting there doing nothing. But there's also a point when the ramp player who just goes unchecked and completely unfettered for like turns and turns and turns, like you got to pay, that guy's got to pay the piper sometime. And some land destruction to blow up his coffers or to blow up his cradle or to blow up whatever absurd toy he's playing with has got to be at least something you consider. And you're going to play at least a ramp deck. Like, I don't, like, the whole game right now, like, is ramp. Like, you're ramping as fast as you can.
Treasures. To play, seven lands on turn four.
So, like, you're like, so while it feels kind of bad to play land destruction, the reality is somebody's got to keep land ramp decks in check. And right now, we're not doing it. We're just saying, that's fine. It's not
cultivates,
okay.
Man. Counter cultivates.
Counter, oh, that makes people so salty. So salty.
I don't do it because I don't, you know, I'm not that guy, I guess.
There's an adage in competitive Magic, bolt the bird. And I mean, in casual Commander, people don't play a lot of Birds of Paradise, but they will play a Cultivate. And so that negate you have in your hand is a prime choice to hold off that negate.
Card advantage wins games no matter if you're pulling lands out of your deck or if you're drawing three cards or five cards in a turn.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen, like, I've got blown out in Standard by it, and I've gotten blown out in Draft by it, where you ignore the obvious value. Not to say you should go and counter that two mana rampant growth every time, but if they're playing a deck that has seven of these spells, maybe hold it for like that Avenger of Zendikar or whatever, but you know.
Yeah. I think there's something to be said for taking your protection to the next level and like going after your opponent's resources
I don't know if it's protection per se, but it's like protecting your
position in the game.
Your position. That is
the whole premise of what we're discussing here. So, like, there is value to having your fields of ruin and your demolition fields and everything else, ghost quarters, whatever, that are going to slow down your opponents to some degree without making them feel like you're just raining on their whole parade. Like, if you go and cast the Armageddon, like, okay, you're a bad person. Like, I can't help that. But if you go with some targeted land ramp or land hate to go and slow down their most powerful pieces, that's, to me, like a wise tactical choice. And I don't think you're, I don't think you'd be, if anybody looks at you side-eye for doing that, I mean, the door is there. Like, you could go over there, my friend, and out the door, because we, like, people just assume their land's going to be untouched. And, like, you're going to make some dude salty. And I really, really want to be there, Pete, when you blow up his land and he's salty.
Here's the, so I used to play this Alesha Stacks deck. It was hardcore Stacks, okay? Ooh, it was...
Yeah.
It was not exactly... Oh, another protection element, before I forget, is, like, Palisade Giant effects, where all damage that would be dealt to you is dealt to that creature instead. That's another example of an interesting protection. Or Selfless Squire is another thing I haven't seen in a while. Selfless Squire
is a good one. It's a good one, though. That's a good one.
So those are other considerations, right? These weird cards that, like, they actually fit your strategy more so than they fit theirs. Like, Boros Reckoner is one of my favorites. But But I want to put, like, I used to play, like, Nomad Riders, man. I used to play that with, like, I was thinking, like, you know, maybe I slide that into a Jaxxus deck and take a
Nomad Riders. I don't Nomad Rider? Singular? Are you sure it's called Nomad? Oh, I don't know, man. Nomad.
I apologize. Avalanche Riders? Is that what it's called?
Oh, okay, that's a different one. Avalanche Riders, that's the goblin, right?
No, it's a human nomad. Sorry. My brain went to it. This card.
Okay, so let's read this card, because I am very confused. I am not
four familiar. Mana haste. It has an echo cost, so it's bad. But it says when it ETBs, destroy target land.
Okay. Yeah.
And there's another one. I forget what it's called, but it's four mana, ETB, destroy target non-basic land. I mean,
right. Okay. Okay. I got it now. I got what you're picking up. Okay. Picking up what you're putting down. I'm there.
I was thinking about that, right? Because, it might protect me if my deck is slower than their deck, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Or if they're playing five color good stuff, like a Jota deck, and I need to slow them down a little bit. I'll blow up one of their triomes or something.
Yeah, so your Goblin Rune Blaster, same sort of thing. Like, you can kick it and blow up things, and yeah.
But again, I don't know if that's necessarily protection. It's sort of like the graveyard hate idea, right? Where it's such nuanced targeted removal and such nuanced. Does it protect your game plan or does it deplete your opponents from theirs? That's the sort of balance we have to consider with these sorts of decisions we make with deck building.
Mm-hmm.
And then just, if you're playing a deck that, like, cares about artifacts, obviously you're going to play a card like Vadim to protect your artifacts in one fall swoop.
Yeah,
you know, like Hannah's Custody or something, where artifacts have Shroud or whatever.
Sterling Grove for Richard Enchantments.
But then if you look at, like, these weird cards, like giving your stuff Totem Armor, right? Like, that's because you're trying to two for one your opponents.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're restricting combat and you're in an aggressive deck, or you're playing Thantis and you're goading creatures, and then you're playing, like, each player chooses three creatures and sacks the rest or something.
Mm-hmm.
They can only really choose the goaded creatures, you know, or you play Languish and you kill all the small things so they only have a few creatures left or something.
Yeah, all those things are interesting ways of thinking about it. And I think, I think you've done a really good job tonight, Pete, of sort of presenting a more flexible way of understanding protection. I think lots of players would benefit from taking that mindset. And when you look at your deck again, when you go to update something, like, folks, like, really think critically about, like, is that Teferi's Protection really the best target, like, best choice for your card? It's a hugely powerful card. I don't think anybody here is saying, don't run Teferi's Protection.
Yeah, you should, but, like, sometimes it doesn't work out. Sometimes you could have played something else that might have actually helped you win the game, like, at that point. Because I definitely resolved Teferi's Protection and it didn't matter. Like, I would go to my next turn, and I didn't really have anything else going on. I just wanted to see what I was going to draw.
Yeah.
So, again, I'm not saying don't play it. I personally love that stuff. I love protection spells, like the 4-mana, if you control your commander, get all the keywords, kill your opponents. Double strike, you know, all that, whatever. Death Touch can be a protection element, too. I think that's why they printed that evergreen ability, really, to make it interesting for leveraging combat with opponents in colors that were realistically not that aggressive. Like, black used to have a lot of Death Touch because it helped them sort of stabilize, right?
Yeah, you trade it. No one liked trading their good creature for a Typhoid Rat.
Right, and it's funny you mentioned Typhoid Rat because I miss those types of silly little cards that, you know what I mean? Now it's Unscrupulous Agent, you know? Now it's exile a card from your hand, 1/1, not a Death Touch 1/1. Death Touch 1/1 with fight spells was one of my favorite things to try to make work anyway.
Yeah, right. Yeah, no, for sure. Anyway, excellent. I think that's a really good way of ending our conversation there. I think there's lots of thought there for people to go into their decks and food for thought there. I think that I definitely am leaving here with some my eyes opened around thinking about protection and how I'm going to try and address it go forward.
Well, in your Dagatar deck, for example, like in the Ozolith is a protection spell for your deck, or like a Forgotten Ancient is a rattlesnake in the deck.
Yes.
I mean, so that potential, and then just like, I think people are so rigid because they watch all this content, which is not a bad thing, but they watch all this stuff and they think like, you know, this is a natural human thing where we see people who are better than us at specific things, or they have these decks that work very consistently, where you have to build your stuff exactly like everybody else. And you have to, you know, play all the good cards because you got to win games or whatever, because maybe your self-esteem isn't where it should be or whatever. But
my win rate. I gotta win for my win rate, man.
My win rate's gotta be, you know, 50-60% or whatever. But dude, it's Commander. Like, you should play your weird spells that do weird things. I think we say this like every week now, but like, yeah, I don't know. Probably. You know, being flexible with removal, being flexible with protection and stuff. Thinking like, there's many different ways you can build a deck. It's designed to be open ended, so. Protecting your stuff should be open-ended as well.
Cool. Yeah. You're not wrong. Yeah. Not wrong. All right, folks.
I'll take care, everybody.
Yeah, it's been a good one. And
Happy first day of spring.
First day of spring is today. Who knew? Wouldn't know it from here. Again, if you want to get a hold of us, check the show notes for all the ways to reach out to us on all the social media platforms and tracking down our show on all your favorite podcast apps. They're all there in the show notes. If you want to get a hold of us, we'd love to hear from you guys and know how you guys choose to protect your decks. I think lots of players out there have got other interesting tech and solutions to the same problems. So with that said, folks, thanks very much. Really appreciate you taking the time to hang out with us tonight. And have fun wherever you next play Magic, everybody.
Take care, everybody. Thanks, and we'll see you next week. Bye now.